Hello, everyone. Welcome to Shakya Presents Movie Night. I'm your host. My name is Rudy Obias. Joining me for this episode, he is the co-founder, the president, and the managing editor of thefilmstage.com, Dan Mecca. Thank you so much for joining me here on Movie Night.
Thank you, Rudy, for having me. Too many titles, I think, than I deserve, but thank you very much for that.
No, you deserve each and every one of these titles. Dan and I, and along with the other Film Stage crew, Jordan Raup and Rafi, I can't pronounce his last name, we all stayed together for a glorious week during the Sundance Film Festival. And
glorious it was, yes.
And it was a very grueling film festival, but you know, just hanging out with these guys and some people from Film School Rejects and film.com, it made everything worthwhile.
It was an amazing time. How many movies, I was going to ask quickly, how many movies did you see at the festival, Mr. Obias?
I watched 27 movies in all in a week. I didn't go to the beginning of the festival, but I saw 27. How many movies did you see?
Actually, good sir, I saw 27 as well. So touche, well done. Me and you both, 27. There it is.
But I did zero interviews, so you probably one up me on that.
I did a few interviews. Yeah, it was good. It was great. I got to talk to the compliance director, which was a highlight for sure, because that was my favorite movie of the festival. So that was definitely a highlight for me. But yeah, it was grueling, but it was great coming home to a packed house of film critics. So that was great.
So yeah, the movie that we're actually going to be talking about in this episode, we're talking about one movie because that's all that we were able to screen this week, is the new movie starring Denzel Washington and Ryan Reynolds, Safe House. Here is a synopsis from IMDb.com. A young CIA agent is tasked with looking after a fugitive in a safe house. But when the safe house is attacked, he finds himself on the run with his charge? I don't know.
I mean, let's just quickly talk about how unsafe that house is in this film.
Yeah, the name Safe House is pretty much a misnomer, because the safe house seemed to be easily taken by the bad guys in this movie, and there's not really any other safe house in this. There's two safe houses in this movie, but it doesn't seem like this movie is really about a safe house.
Right, and when people go into safe houses, things are the opposite of safe. I mean, it's funny, you know what I mean, in this case, because, you know, even the tagline is the opposite of the title. So I just kind of love that idea that, you know, when you go into a safe house, no one is safe. And I kind of wish they did more with that. But hey, you know, it is what it is. It's, you know.
So let me ask you, Dan, what are your thoughts on Safe House overall?
Overall, I would say, given the leads, Denzel Washington and Mr. Ryan Green Lantern Reynolds, I expected more, and a lot of the fault in my case falls on Mr. Reynolds. I didn't think he lived up to his leading role. That's my overall view.
Yeah, I wasn't a real big fan of this movie, and you bring up an interesting point about the tagline of the movie Safe House is no one is safe. And I think that just pertains to the audience going into seeing this movie, that no one is really safe in watching this. I mean, I felt that the story was pretty run of the mill, typical. I saw it in a kind of a way of kind of the sequel to Training Day, as it were. And I was just really put off by the one selling point of this movie, I guess, the action. I really hate this shaky cam, chaos cinema type of action sequences that we get in this movie. I mean, I had no idea where people were on the screen. It all just seemed to blur together, and I really wasn't a big fan of the action. What are your thoughts on the action of this movie?
Well, it's funny because I kept thinking about, speaking of the action, while watching this film, and it's funny to even use this movie as a positive example, you know, to compare with, but I kept thinking about the action in The Book of Eli, and with, you know, it was another Denzel Washington film, and how it was so well choreographed, even though that movie has a lot of flaws of its own. The Hughes brothers in that film do a great job of really framing the action and letting it play out on its own. Whereas, like you were saying, in this film, it kind of reminded me of the worst parts of The Bourne Supremacy, which is to say that, you know, you have these henchmen fighting this one guy, and the camera's moving so quickly, so much, and you know, you have the editor cutting so much that I was half the time not enjoying the action, just trying to figure out where my stars were, where the bad guys were. And you know, the bad guys, you know, to that point are no more than just henchmen anyway, so there's no context in that respect. So yeah, I agree with you. There's a lot of trying to figure out who everyone was instead of really just enjoying what was happening on screen.
Yeah, there are moments with the action in this movie where I'm thinking to myself, well, someone gets stabbed, but I don't see them getting stabbed. I hear them getting stabbed, but I don't actually see it. I mean, I don't even see someone pulling out a knife. I hear someone pulling out a knife. And I was thinking to myself while watching this movie, doesn't anyone like storyboarding anymore? You know, I mean,
yeah,
it
exactly.
Just seemed like, I mean, I guess I'll concede that maybe Denzel Washington and Ryan Reynolds aren't the greatest of action heroes. Maybe they have their limitations, but overall, I just felt that everything just felt so lazy in the way this whole movie was put together.
Yeah, no, I mean, I can't really, you know, like I can't really disagree with you in terms of the action in that respect, because, yeah, I mean, it just was one of these things where the sound design seemed to be doing so much of the work, which we saw this in a big theater, and I was, you know, blown away by how loud the sound was in some of these scenes. And I couldn't help but feeling that it was almost overcompensating for what wasn't being shown. You know what I mean? And so at first, the loud sound, loud gunshots, and like you're saying, these loud special effects were interesting and exciting. But at a point, they just became kind of, you know, grueling. And I kind of wanted them to stop. So, I wish that they had done more storyboarding. I agree.
And the story of this movie, the Ryan Reynolds is playing this young CIA agent named Matt, and he his whole thing is that he takes care of the safe house, and since if no one's there, all he has to do is just sit around and do nothing and wait for guests to arrive, so to speak. And so when he gets thrown into what happens in the movie, namely Denzel Washington being this kind of a scofflaw or just a traitor to the United States with the coolest name imaginable, I think.
The coolest name.
Tobin Frost.
Oh.
And that, which is such a badass name. And
it really
I
is.
Loved every time they said his name, Tobin Frost, in this movie.
And they clearly want to say it as much as possible because they're aware of how badass it is. You know what I mean? Like, I think I heard the words Tobin Frost 100 times in that movie. And I don't mind. I don't mind.
That when so we actually funny. Get into, like, I guess the cat and mouse aspects of this film, I know how this is going to end, and I know what's going to happen. And I think we've seen enough movies, even not even top caliber movies, where if we've seen enough spy movies, we know where this is going to go. And this really did hit those beats minute by minute. I mean, even to the fact of when we meet the CIA agents who are kind of overseeing the duties of Ryan Reynolds, played by Vera Farmiga and Brandon Gleeson, we know what's going to happen. Nothing in there I found very interesting at all.
Well, I call it the this is a developing theory, but I'm going to go ahead and call it the Sam Shepard theory, which is when Sam Shepard is playing some sort of dark, you know, shadowy agent in a film, you should go ahead and run. You should run and, you know, either, you know, catch it on VOD or, you know, rent it, or you just ignore it altogether. Because let's not forget, he played a very similar character in a movie called Stealth not too many years ago. And in a movie called Swordfish not too many years before that. So when Sam Shepard is cashing in, as it were, and playing these characters, it's a dangerous road you're going down. But speaking of Vera Farmiga, a shame to see her completely wasted here. And I was just disappointed that she even took the role, because I feel like she's at a point in her career where maybe she can lobby for better roles. But apparently that's not the case.
Well, maybe she was nominated for an Academy Award maybe a couple years ago for Up in the Air, I believe. And
right, yes.
maybe because I know she made a movie in between, and maybe she's just more interested in making movies than being in movies. But you're right. I felt that even having someone who is as interesting to look at on screen and a wonderful actress in Vera Farmiga was absolutely wasted in this movie. I mean, more so than I thought she was in Source Code. You know, at least in Source Code, she had some sort of a character development. But
right, there was an agenda in Source Code. You know, she was there was a goal she was trying to achieve. In this movie, what I'll say about this movie in terms of positives is things that interested me, is the idea that, you know, when this, you know, and it's in the trailer, so I don't feel like this is a spoiler, when this safe house is breached, I do like the idea that you have people that are above Ryan Reynolds's hero character who are trying to kind of put the blame on him immediately. I thought that was kind of an interesting change that David Guggenheim, who wrote the script, tried to implement, but I just feel like it didn't end up going the distance. They didn't really follow through with that. So I was kind of disappointed to see that interesting idea never really go anywhere. But other than that, there wasn't really plot-wise anything too new to the genre.
Yeah, it seemed like every interesting idea that could have been explored wasn't explored. It was like introduced in one scene and never brought up ever again. I mean, even to the fact of how safe is a safe house, how well do you know the people working around you?
Right.
What are the elements of – how far can the United States government go in interrogating a prisoner? And exactly the point that you made, nothing is really explored at all. I mean, as soon as they introduce these elements, it's off to the races and some really half thought out action sequences or chase scene that I could really just do without, you know, because I've seen it better in better movies. And there's nothing in this movie that really kept me going in terms of plot or even in character relationships. I think the only thing that I really enjoyed in this movie, and I won't even say the chemistry between Ryan Reynolds and Denzel Washington, because I felt that was pretty devoid. But the only thing I really liked in this movie was just seeing Denzel Washington on screen. You know, I mean,
yeah, and I agree, but at the same time, it made me almost sad because, you know, yeah. Denzel's great, of course, because he, you know, he is a born movie star. He always has been. But, you know, how many Man on Fires, Deja Vus, you know, safe houses do we have to watch where, you know, Zell's running around doing his thing, you know, he has this swagger that's great to watch. But I want to see him, you know, I want to see him in a movie, you know, even American Gangster, you know, a movie where there's a little bit of, you know, dynamic action going on within his character. You know, there's something that happens at the end of this movie, you know, a moment where it's almost like they're reaching for that Denzel charm. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And you're just like, no, like, you know, you're not building to this. This is just something you're reaching for because you know that the man's an amazing actor. And I just hate that he's taking these roles where you're watching him do great work in just a not great, you know, piece of writing or directing or just film in general. So I loved watching him, but I hated the movie, you know, because I knew he could have been doing other movies instead. But
I think he produced this movie. Maybe that was his stake in this film.
Yeah, no, he definitely did. I saw it in the opening credits, but you got to produce other stuff, so come on.
Yeah, I mean, I love Denzel Washington's charisma, and, you know, he's definitely charming and very witty, you know, I mean. Every time he says something, you know, you can't help but smirk and be like, oh, Denzel Washington.
Oh, Denzel.
You know.
Well, speaking of witty, this is something that I kind of want to ask you about, Rudy. What is – okay, so Ryan Reynolds, right, he's becoming – you know, people have decided he's going to become this movie star, right? Now, his choice, it would appear, is to choose not to be funny, right, which is what made his career. He's a very charming, funny guy.
Van Wilder comes to mind.
Van Wilder, exactly. Waiting, even. But, okay, so you have Green Lantern, where he's the most serious superhero in the history of the world. And then now you have Safe House, where he's the most serious young, you know what I mean, CIA agent in the entire world. And so you're watching this actor who builds his career on his sense of humor and his good-looking face. And you take one of those things away, and what do you get? And I just was – I don't think you get much. I was, like, very disappointed in what he brought to the table.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't very charming or witty at all. I mean, he took his shirt off a good number of times, which, you know, we could all appreciate and enjoy.
Oh, of course.
But at the end of the day, with someone like Ryan Reynolds, I mean, you watch his movies, the movies he's in, because he is charming and funny. But I don't know if – you know, he has those movie star chops to be like a Brad Pitt or a George Clooney or even a Denzel Washington. That I know that's what Hollywood is trying to push with this guy, but it's right. Just not happening. You know, not
yeah,
happening.
I have to agree with you. I would have probably disagreed with you a year ago, but it just seems like there's something missing, and I don't even know what it is. I was definitely one of this guy's biggest fans. You know, back in the Two Guys and a Girl and a Pizza days and you know, like, you know, Van Wilder and all these other movies. But it just seems like you're right. There's an element to his acting that's missing, or, you know, something that just needs to be fixed. Because, I mean, Denzel Washington wipes the floor with this guy, and it just becomes redundant at a point. So I don't know.
I mean, I liked him in Buried. I think that was the last thing.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I'll give you Buried. I mean, Buried was definitely a nuanced performance. He was doing a lot, but I just, you know, I feel like he needs to take a step that maybe he's not willing to take or something like that. I wrote in my review of this film that he kind of reminds me of Ben Affleck when Ben Affleck was doing that movie star transition. Mm-hmm.
Like it just from Chasing Amy to right. Armageddon.
Exactly. Like, he did Armageddon, right? It was a hit. He did a couple other movies. They were enough of hits that people decided maybe this guy can become something. And then all of a sudden he's in Paycheck and you're just confused. You know what I mean? You're like, what happened to this guy? And I feel like Ryan Reynolds is going down that road, and I really don't want to see that happen. So,
well, with Ben Affleck, I consider him more of a director now. And I actually directing movies when, you know, namely like The Town and Gone Baby Gone. I would like to see more of Ben Affleck doing that. And it feels like he is leaning towards that than actually becoming some sort of an action star in movies, which we thought he was going to be. And you're probably right. Probably Ryan Reynolds is going down that route as well. I was actually surprised to see Brendan Gleeson in this movie, and I'm a huge fan of Brendan Gleeson, and I thought he was pretty serviceable in this role. I mean, he's not his usual comedic self in this movie, but he still has this presence on screen that I just gravitate to. What did you think of Brendan Gleeson in this film?
I mean, I really like Brendan Gleeson, and I thought that, you know, he did the most with the role that he was given. I think it's a situation where, you know, I don't know if he's the right person to cast in the role that he was in, just given that the way that the plot moves along. You know, I won't say more than that, but I just this movie reminded me a lot of Enemy of the State, actually, in terms of its casting, but not quite as entertaining as that film.
No.
But, you know, you see these actors who are in these roles that are pretty minimal, and you're thinking to yourself, wow, I wonder why they took these roles. You know what I mean? Like, you know, Gene Hackman in Enemy of the State, you think, why did he say yes? And similarly with Brendan Gleeson in this role, I couldn't help wondering what the selling point was. And, you know, obviously, you know, you think about money, but you want to say no, you know, that wasn't the only reason. But, you know, for his, you know, doing his job, I think he was serviceable, like you said, and I enjoyed watching him. I wish there was more of him, actually. That would have been, you know, an interesting subplot that I wish they had dived into a little bit more, but alas, they did not.
Well, it's interesting that you do bring up Enemy of the State. I mean, one movie in Enemy of the State has really good action sequences that are cut together and choreographed and right. and put together very well. And in this movie, it's the complete opposite, where it just seems like a jumbled mess. And right. But in Enemy of the State, which I feel why people like that movie is because it is funny. You know, it has
– Exactly. Exactly.
And I feel that this movie could have used that a little, like, could have had more humor in it, because right. I don't feel that this story was that heavy to begin with. You know, I mean, it couldn't lend for some comedy. I mean, it's not exactly about terrorism, but it feels like this could have been a funnier movie. And especially when you have two actors in it, one who is naturally charming in Denzel Washington and one who could be funny in movies because we've seen it in the past in Ryan Reynolds. It just seems like it's a missed opportunity here.
Yeah, and this kind of points to something that I've been talking about to just people over the last few years, just about these tentpole studio. I mean, not even tentpole, just studio movies in general, where I feel like the awareness, you know, the comedic awareness in studio films seems to be dying, and I don't really understand why. I mean, like we were saying, even Green Lantern, which is a silly comic book movie, doesn't have enough comedy. I mean, there's so much serious dialogue, and I mean, the dialogue is inherently goofy because it's about another world. You know what I mean? There's elements that are not real, right? So a lack of self-awareness really hurts the story, and I feel like in this case, it's very similar. I mean, you have things happening that are out of our element as viewers. You know, we do not experience the things that these people are experiencing. So a little, you know, lighthearted commentary goes a long way, and this movie lacked any of it, except for Denzel Washington, who I feel like was making a different movie than everybody else. So,
well, I think it just comes down to the construction of the film. I mean, with a movie like Enemy of the State, I mean, it's not the greatest movie in the world, but I think that's a good comparison or touchstone with Safe House. With a movie like Enemy of the State, since it's put together well enough, since it was, you get this idea that it was storyboarded, that there's none of this shaky cam action. It seems like the action in that movie was really put together and edited well. And so that would leave room, if everything's thought out in a chase sequence, for comedy. That you can cut to Seth Green or Jack Black, and they can say something really funny and witty really fast, and then you can get back to Jason Lee running away from Will Smith or something. And in this movie, we just have nonsensical chase scenes, don't even know the geography of where the people are on the screen. And so that really wouldn't leave it open to have those fast cuts to X character making a snappy remark. A real missed opportunity. Like, actually, while I was watching this movie, since Denzel Washington has this awesome name, Tobin Frost, I thought it would have been really cool, no pun intended when I said cool, but here's a pun. Like, if he pulled a gun on someone and said freeze and then shot
him. See, you should be writing these movies, Rudy. That's what I'm saying. I would have jumped out of my seat and loved every minute thereon. You know what I mean?
I was waiting for someone just to have a chilly cold remark for it, because his name was Tobin Frost. But again, missed opportunity.
Someone says to Tobin Frost, "Hey, do you want a beer?" And he just goes, "Frosted." And it's brilliant. That's a movie right there. That's a movie. I don't know. I mean, you know, I'm just confused. I'm just confused by, you know, the utilization of these actors and, you know, these directors. I mean, Daniel Espinosa, he's no chump. You know what I mean? Snabba Cash is a well-made gangster movie. You know what I mean? You know, it's not like he's not a rookie. You know what I mean? This is a guy who knows how to direct a movie. And it just seems like there was some sort of interference or miscommunication. And I just, you know, this movie reportedly cost $85 million.
What?
And I'm just,
I don't see that. Me. Well, maybe the locations, because they did. It looks like they didn't shoot this in America, but
right. I think they did. I mean, from what I've read, they did actually shoot it in South Africa, where the movie takes place. Yeah. But how do you spend $100 million on a movie where there are no jokes and just no joy, just loud noises and explosions? It baffles the mind, but we'll see.
One last element, and this is a spoiler, so I guess spoilers for Safe House coming up. when we find out, and I actually saw this miles away, practically in Act 2.
Yes.
When they reveal that Brendan Gleeson is somewhat of a mole,
right,
in the CIA, that he is kind of a turncoat or just wanting to hide, cover up things, which you can see a mile away. If you've seen any movie like this, when they show the people who are on top of things, you have to think one of these people is in on it, or maybe two of them are on it, or maybe all of them. And the one who is usually saying things against the other thing, like, something's wrong here is the usual one who is going to get killed later
on. Exactly, of course.
And when Brendan Gleeson's character kills Vera Farmiga's character, I saw that miles away.
I mean, yeah, it just – I don't know. It's kind of like I remember when I was younger, I saw Taking Lives. You remember that movie?
No, I didn't see that
Taking
one.
Lives. It was this movie by DJ Caruso, and it was kind of like a seven ripoff of a movie. Angelina Jolie and Ethan Hawke was in it. And I remember I was wondering why Ethan Hawke took a role like this in this like serial killer thriller. And that was the beginning of that realization of casting. You know what I mean? You know, when you're watching a movie like Safe House, you know, which is this spy action thriller, you're watching a movie like Taking Lives, which is this, you know, crime thriller. And you have these high caliber actors who are pretty honest about the movies they choose in these movies. You think, you know, you think to yourself, why did they take this role? And then, you know, the ABC conclusion is so they could be the bad guy, right? So then it's like it takes away this big element of the film, and then, you know, you already know. And I feel like in this movie they're actually pretty, you know, pretty upfront about it. I mean, there's like a shot 15 minutes into the movie where they reference, you know, who the mole could be, and it literally that's directly to Brendan Gleeson, who like looks away. So, I mean, I feel like they were blueprinting that for us. But yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, it's surprisingly standard given the caliber of everybody involved. So
I guess lastly, like, this movie is about what is the running time of this movie? It's
115 minutes.
115 minutes, and in all of this 115 minutes, I can only think of one really thoughtful shot in this movie, and it's when they're at the second safe house in the middle of nowhere, and Ryan Reynolds is having is fighting the other guy who keeps that
Joel
safe house.
Joel Kinnaman, baby, the killing.
And when they fall out of the window in slow motion, you know, I thought that was very inspired. That was the only shot in the whole movie where I thought, well, this had some thought behind it. But
well, yeah, I mean, I'll say, you know, in terms of the shot selection, I did like the camera stayed real close to Denzel and Ryan Reynolds in terms of, you know, you had a lot of extreme close ups, and I did appreciate that. But yeah, I agree. There wasn't, you know, once again with Espinoza directing, I was surprised that there wasn't more flair on display, and that was kind of aggravating to watch.
So how do you think this movie is going to do this weekend?
That's a good question. I've been talking to Jordan, Mr. Jordan Ralph, about this, also of the film stage. And I think, you know, Zell, he has an audience. And I think this movie will open to kind of his patented 20 million-ish, you know, opening weekend. But I think, you know, instead of doing American Gangster money, you know, where it's going to kind of build on that, it'll taper off like a movie like Deja Vu, and it just kind of become your standard Denzel Washington movie, you know, make $75 million and not end up being the hit that, you know, everybody's hoping it'll be. So
do you think this is going to win the weekend over Journey to the Mysterious Island?
You know, that's a good question.
The Phantom Menace re-release.
I don't know. I think we'll be close. Right?
Yeah, I mean, The Vow has its audience. The Phantom Menace has its audience.
Maybe, actually, let's not forget that Dear John, also starring Channing Tatum a couple of years ago, grossed $30 million its opening weekend.
And it's Valentine's Day.
And it's Valentine's Day.
It's probably The Vow.
So I'm going to – can we agree, I think, Rudy? Yeah. Since me and you are going to be seeing The Vow together anyway, can we agree that The Vow probably reached number one? What do you think?
Yeah.
What do you think?
I vow it. That it probably will.
We vow will be the victor of the week.
It's a safe bet on the house Vow will win this weekend.
So take your journey to the theater and figure out.
And don't be a Phantom Menace.
Oh my God.
And go ahead and
there
see
it is.
The Vow.
Oh, I forgot about the Phantom Menace. Yeah, who knows? Maybe all those people who pretend to hate but secretly love George Lucas will come out and support the worst Star Wars movie, even though that's not the case. But
if you remember when they re-released the original series about 20 years ago in 1997, right. Maybe not 20 years, like 15 or so years ago.
Yeah.
The first Star Wars did well, but I don't think Empire or Jedi in the subsequent months afterwards, I don't think those did very well at the
box. I mean, but do you think it was because it was the they didn't space it out enough, though? Or do you think it was because of people just got tired of it?
Maybe because it was released in the – like, one was released in March, you know, and
– I feel like the year gap between each of these planned 3D releases might help, you know, as opposed to a couple months, but –
Like the, when they released the original series, it was like one month it was Star Wars, the next month it was Empire, then the next month it was Jedi.
Right.
So let's wrap up this episode of Movie Night. Where can we find you online, Dan Mecca?
Oh, well, you can find me at thefilmstage.com. I'm always doing what I do, but also on Twitter. My handle is DJMECCA. Just follow me and enjoy the ramblings.
Also known as DJ Mecca.
DJ Mecca like the holy city, you know it.
So you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Rudy_Obias. That's RUDIE_OBIAS. Shakya.com, AutorCast.com, and everything that is Rudy at RudyObias.com. I'm not sure what we're going to be talking about on the next episode of Movie Night. I mean, Sony is not screening Ghost Rider for me, and I did not get an invitation to This Means War, so maybe...
Well, I have a question, though. With them not screening it, do you have a spirit of vengeance for that, or...
I'm curious. I mean, Nick Cage is in it, and, you know, I'm curious for any Nick Cage movie.
I mean, who isn't, really? And Idris Elba's in it. Let's not forget that.
And I'm a fan of Neville Dean and Taylor. You know, the kinetic action in their movies really lends itself to, you know... the kinds of movies they put out, and right. I'm a fan of their brand of action, and so I'm looking forward to that. The secret world of, how do you pronounce that?
Arrietty.
Maybe we'll talk about that, but it just seems like it's for this podcast, it's going to be on the smaller side of releases, because I don't know if we'll be able to see the bigger releases, but we shall see. So I would like to thank Dan Mecca for joining me on this episode of Movie Night. Thank you so much for joining me on such short notice.
Oh, please, Rudy. Thank you. It was great being here, obviously. Love talking to you.
All right. So closing out this episode of Movie Night, thank you so much for listening to our show. Goodbye.